Well, we finally come to our session on manuscripting your sermon. Only after this do we have the delivery of the sermon to finish up what we need to talk about here in terms of the seven steps. So we have made our way past the six steps now, ending with structure. Kind of hung around the structure one and developed that one quite a bit on outlining and clarity, introduction, conclusion, applications, and that sort of thing. And now we have finally made our way to the final session, or the final step, that is. That is actually preaching the message, going from the flesh of the study to the flesh of the actual words that we use in preaching the sermon. And that is really comprised of developing the manuscript and then actually practicing the message before preaching it. If you remember where we come from, I introduced on the first session that we have four objectives in the course, and that is to preach a message, first of all, that is true. We know that it's true because it actually says what God says, and it's completely clear to what the scripture is saying. Interesting, we've been kind of camping there a little bit. That's where applications and illustrations fit, so that we are people who are actually those that others want to listen to. Clarity is also quite important. We had a session on being clear, and I hope you gain some new ideas as to actually how to do that, how to be really clear when you're speaking, when you're preaching, when you're teaching. And then relevance, of course, is quite important. Here's where the application especially came into play. And you'll note on our sermon evaluation form, the lower right-hand corner, we really get down to, what specific application did you make on this message and in listening to this message? I think that's probably one of the most important parts of the sermon and on the forum here. I hope that each one of you will be able to say, yeah, I did make an application as a result of listening to this message. So this is the sermon evaluation form that we'll be using from this point on in the course, as we evaluate the various sermons that we'll hear spoken here in class. You'll notice in our notes on page Roman numeral 6 that we have the various speakers' names listed, all 9 of you in this particular course, and then it'll show you not only the text that you're preaching, but shows you actually who the 3 evaluators are in your sermon. So, speaker number 1, you look at the numbers across from it, it'll show you the speaker number, who's the first evaluator, the second evaluator, and third evaluator. We'll follow that all the way through for the epistle sermons, and then we'll switch it up a bit so that you have a different 3 people that are evaluating you on the narrative sermons. But let's get to the manuscripting now. What exactly are we talking about when we're manuscripting the sermon? What is a sermon manuscript? Well, the answer to that is it's writing down exactly what you're saying, word for word, in a sermon. It doesn't mean you read this, but it means you've thought through clearly down to the very words that you'll use, how you're actually going to communicate the message. You see an example of Haddon Robinson's in the book Biblical Sermons. This is really the classic book on sermon manuscripts. There haven't been that many books that actually give you the actual sermons, but this is one that I found very, very helpful. And interestingly, it doesn't show perfect sermons in this book. It leaves them with their flaws. It leaves them with things to notice in terms of how to improve them. And so one of your assignments is to go through his sermon on a case study in temptation and it gives the word for word what Patton Robinson said when he preached that particular sermon on Genesis 3, 1 to 7. And so you'll have an assignment on that, evaluating his sermon. So we've made our way, finally, to step number 7. And I am requiring you to submit a sermon manuscript the day before you preach to make sure that you're not up all night long working on the manuscript when you really need to be getting rest the night before you preach. So that's due at 1 o'clock the day before you preach. Okay, so I want you to work on that ahead of time. And of course, you can be practicing it after that. Keep another copy for you. Keep it, or make another digital copy for you. But give me one a day before you preach, and that's the one I'll actually be grading. All right. Now, why do we actually manuscript? Why do we write down in advance word for what we're going to say? Well, one of the reasons would be it forces you to choose the best word. You have a variety of words to use in terms of to communicate your idea. But we actually find Solomon talking about the importance of using the right word in his last chapter of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes 12 says, not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words. And what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads. They're collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of writing many books, there's no end. And much study wearies the body. This is the famous life verse of seminarians, huh? But notice what he says here. He mentions using the right words two times. There are right words and there are wrong words. And the teacher, Solomon himself, searched to find just the right words because they're like goads. A goad is a sharp stick that you use in prodding an animal along the way, helping them turn left or right or whatever you want that animal to do as you're farming. Most of us are not familiar with that kind of imagery, but it was very familiar in Solomon's day. And likewise, words are the same. Words kind of prod us along in the right way. There are better words and worse words to use to communicate concepts. And ideally, we want to use the best words. So why should we manuscript? Well, number one, it forces you to choose the best word. I also do not believe that words, you know, just automatically come for most of us. Most of us, we kind of have to work on this. We have to think it through in terms of which words are going to be the best words for us to use. You'll note on page 78 that I'm trying to spell this out in greater detail for all of us, speaking of manuscripts. This is a manuscript in some ways, at least a very detailed outline on manuscripting. And I put here on point B, realism. It's really the idea here. Very few of us are good extemporaneous speakers who can find just the right words at the right times without prior written preparation. I like the pastor's wife who says to her husband, "Honey, I love your sermon. However, Spurgeon spoke." You know, manuscripts can help us not look so bad. We can get our sturgeons separated from our Spurgeons so that we don't have so many slips of the tongue. Another reason I manuscript each time I preach is because they can use the sermon later. In my first pastorate, I just kind of felt I was so busy. It was very difficult for me to actually manuscript everything. And there's a few times that I actually didn't manuscript. And I can look back on those old notes and it says, share the story of what happened last Thursday. Well, That's not real helpful for me in the 21st century. I know something happened on Thursday, July 18, 1986. But I don't know what. I have no idea what happened. These manuscripts are not very helpful for me. I wish I had spelled out more clearly the story, and then I can use the story actually later on. The value of manuscripts is actually given by Ramesh Richard in a story he's told about how someone came to him after speaking to a seminary audience. A student expressed to him, he said, "Wow, that was a fantastic message. Have you put that down in writing?" And Ramesh said, "No, but I hope that someday after I die, my wife will put it down in writing." "Well," student said, "I sure hope it's soon." Well, still hasn't happened. He sees the importance of it. I think Ramesh Richard, actually, though, is one of those very gifted speakers. Words come to his mind quite clearly. Most of us are not quite like that, though. But manuscripting forces us to choose the best word, because words don't just come to us, for most of us. And you can use the sermon later. And the other thing is that manuscripting helps you keep your time limit. You can much better determine the length of your sermon. Let's say if you have 30 minutes to preach, if you manuscript your sermon, then you can practice it through saying word for word what you're going to say and see if you actually can get it into 30 minutes. I was warned time and again by another church that I spoke at last month, "Please keep your sermon to 30 minutes. Please, 30 minutes." I guess maybe he had listened to some of my sermons on my church website. They went way over 30 minutes, many of them about an hour long. My people can handle that at my church because they're thick skin, you know. They're really used to me preaching these longer sermons, but most churches are not. It's like the man going on to church, and he says, "We'll know if he finishes by noon." And of course, he's referring to the sign, sermon. "Do miracles still happen, Reverend Clanton?" Well, it would be a miracle for this man if he finished by noon. That seems to be the magic time for a lot of churches. Our church service starts at 10:30, and it's quite important to finish by noon. I keep being reminded by my wife about that. And sermon length has long been an issue in certain cultures. Some are not that concerned about it. I know in Indonesia you can preach 1 to 2 hours, and the longer the better in that time-oriented or not-so-time-oriented culture. But typically when you get to very urban cultures, time is more important. And the length has always been important, but more so and less so depending on the certain society. So manuscripts keep us from actually biting off more than we can chew, keeping our time limit. When you practice it through a few times, if you're not within your allotted time limit, we have 15 minutes allotted in this class. And then 1 point is deducted from your grade for every minute that you go over 15 minutes. But it's more serious than that when you're actually preaching in a church. It's not that you get penalized a point, but you can actually keep people from coming back, especially those who do not know the gospel. If the message is too long, they will not return, and they will not be under the ministry of the word for the long haul. So that's a very, very important thing. And basically, point E here in terms of why manuscript, it just helps you be a better preacher. It helps you preach better when you think through what you're actually going to say word for word. Now, how do you actually do it? This is the more important issue that we need to address. And so let's continue here on page 78, in the middle of the page. Hopefully these hints will help you know how to manuscript better. As far as I can see it, there are essentially two types of manuscripts, two options. One I call the prose manuscript. And what that means is you essentially have text appearing in paragraphs without indentation, and then you have the structure shown in a separate column design on the left. So it goes somewhat like a research paper, and then on the left-hand side, you kind of clue yourself into what you're actually trying to do in the manuscript itself. So you're reading, or you're planning to say what's on the right-hand side, but on the left, you show that you're trying to develop interest and raise need, and you're stating your subject, etc. If you look at page 82 in the notes, you'll see an example of a prose manuscript. This is actually my senior sermon when I was at Dallas Seminary. I call it "Ah" or "Blah." It's based in Ecclesiastes 5, 1-7. So you'll see in this manuscript, there's essentially two columns. The larger column giving the text of the sermon. The disgusted wife complained to the marriage counselor, "I want a divorce because my husband treats me just like he does Jesus." "What? What do you mean?" the counselor asked. "Well, I get 20 seconds of the same comments before every meal. Half-hearted praise, one-way conversation for 10 minutes a week, and every time I start talking, his eyelids droop and he's on his way to slumberland." There's my introduction, introductory little story there. What am I trying to do with that? I'm trying to arouse interest. So I put that in the left-hand side. Arouse interest by shock. Well, wouldn't everyone want to be married to someone who treats them like Jesus? Like they would Jesus? Not so. Not when that's our perspective toward worship. So as you can see, as you go through that prose manuscript, I state where the main point one is. I put a T before that halfway down the page. So there's our first main point, honor God in your worship. I show where I'm giving illustrations. And this was helpful for me when I was actually learning this particular sermon to preach it without notes, as we did when I had my preaching course. And that way I could go on for page 82 to 85 without any notes at all. And this is what you'll do in our class here. You'll go on through. You won't be actually preaching in such a way that you're memorizing word for word what you're doing here. But using the prose manuscript can be a clear way to state in different columns what you're actually trying to do. After I graduated from seminary, I found it kind of difficult, though, to take the prose manuscript to actually make that from what I was actually designing beforehand as an outline. And I found it more effective to design my one-page outline first and then copy it on over to the beginning of the file and then flesh it all out so I actually have what I call the outline manuscript. And everything in it is in outline form, but it's still a manuscript because I'm going word for word. So I have an outline that looks like an outline manuscript that actually looks like the outline itself. So I highlight my introduction in bold print. I state the main point in bold print. And then I have the subpoints that follow just like I do in an outline. If you want an example of what that looks like, go to page 86. And here on 86, you see another sermon that I preached on 2 Samuel 1, 1-6, zeroing in especially on verse 5. And on this one, you'll see that it is in outline form, but it's not really an outline. It's a verbatim, it's a word-for-word illustration. I mean, a manuscript. And this one also adds the PowerPoint slides that I'm using that I highlight in these rectangular boxes on the left. That shows me when to switch to the next slide. And oftentimes I'll take what I have there in those words on the right and paste that into the text, the notes section of the PowerPoint slide. And that way I'm really actually, I don't have to bring any paper with me up into the pulpit. I can just kind of go on through it. And I can see the sermon as a whole much better with the outline manuscript. So this is the one I use all the time now. If you go on to my website at Bible Study Downloads, you'll see hundreds of these outline manuscripts. And they are essentially, as the name implies, manuscripts that are done in outline form. And you'll see this one also goes on for a few pages. It typically takes me about 5 minutes per page to preach through a sermon. And this sermon right here is 5 pages long, so it's about a 25-30 minute sermon. And I find that it's very helpful to do the outline manuscript. You'll see another one on page 148 to 50, a bit shorter message because that one's only, 3 pages long. And that one is, it's still a message, but this one is only 12 minutes long. So that's why it's only 3 pages long. It's designed for me to preach this and be translated into Chinese, so I kept the message much shorter on John 13. Now, why do I use the outline manuscript? I think it has some advantages. Number one, it's easier to write because you just take your outline that you've already worked on as a fleshing out your exegetical outline and turning it into a sermon outline. Then you just cut and paste that at the front of your file, and then you go ahead and develop it further. It's easier to read, too. If you do bring your manuscript up in the pulpit, which we cannot do for the class, but many pastors actually do that. To see things in outline form makes it much easier for you to be able to look down and see where you're at on the page, rather than every one of the paragraphs essentially looking the same, where you would tend to actually just read the message instead of just kind of looking down to see where you're at. It's also easier to edit. If you're using the Microsoft Outline form, you can very quickly and easily add a second point or a third point by doing your editing in the outline form, so you don't have to be putting numbers and letters in front of every one of these. You can get on the website the sermon outline manuscript there on the homiletics link, the preaching link, and that can be kind of a format that you can use for your sermons. I hope you'll find that helpful. I use that each time I'm developing a new sermon. It's also easier to memorize. When you see things in outline form, your mind is looking for structure. You're looking for superior points, subordinate points, coordinate points. And when you see them outlined like that, it's a lot easier for you to be able to internalize them or memorize them. Now, whatever option you use, these things I do want you to pay attention to. Back to page 78. Number one, be clear. Either one of these can be clear. But I want you to make sure that you're, no matter how deep the truth is, you really don't know until you can explain it. So have a clear outline. Clarity, the manuscript level, starts with clarity in the big picture. No surprise, but if you have a homiletical outline that's not very clear, you're going to have a sermon manuscript that's not very clear as well. Keep your sentences short, not more than 17 to 18 words. In fact, you don't even have to have full sentences when you're doing a sermon manuscript because you're just writing it out as you would say it, and sometimes we don't speak in full sentences. But have a simple sentence structure. Write this way. Write main subject, main verb, and then where it's needed. You have the main object. And package only one thought per sentence. Don't have more complicated sentences, even if they're shorter sentences. Concentrate on independent clauses, too. Here's an example of how not to write by Lewis Berry Chafer in his Systematic Theology. You have to realize he died in 1953, so in his time, people spoke and they wrote in much longer sentences, and it's quite difficult for us nowadays to see that. So tell me what you think he's saying. I'll read it for you. As has been intimated, it's noticeable that the great majority of the works on systematic theology have been satisfied to trace the origin of sin no further than to the fall of man in Eden. It is true that human sin began in Eden, but though Adam merely reenacted that sin which before him had been committed in heaven, the essential character of sin is to be determined to a large measure by the sin of the first angel rather than by its reproduction by the first man. Now, what are you thinking now that you've seen me read an entire paragraph of what is it, about 12 lines? It only has two sentences in it. Write what he said in one sentence. Can you think about what he's actually said? And you want to pause the audio at this point. Just hit the pause button. Write down what he said in one sentence before you continue. So what do you think he actually was saying? I asked you to write it in a single sentence. Perhaps yours said something like this. Most theological works say sin began in Eden, but it really began in heaven. See, that's taking these 12 lines and making them only two lines. How about even shorter? Sin began in heaven, not earth. Interesting thought, is it not? Because most of the time we think that sin first happened on earth in the garden. But Satan actually was the first one to sin. But that profound thought nowadays is lost to us because the sentence is too long, too cumbersome for us to be able to grasp. And so when you're doing your sermon outline, you want to make sure that you are writing it in such a way that you're using shorter sentences and you're being very conversational in your tone. Use simple words. Continuing on page 79. Avoid specialized vocabulary. Remember, you're not preaching for scholars. You're not preaching to show people your vast vocabulary. So avoid words like angst or an eschatology, pneumatology, exegesis, existential, Johannine. Don't compare the Johannine and the Petrine literature in the New Testament. People are going to go, what in the world is a Petrine? You know, they have no idea what you're talking about. And also, prefer the short word. Short words are better than the long words. Interestingly, 73% of the words in Psalm 23 is a one-syllable word. 76% of the words in the Lord's Prayer is a one-syllable word. 80% of the words used in 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, are one-syllable words. These three chapters, Psalm 23, Matthew 6, 1 Corinthians 13, have had a profound impact on people over the years. And part of it is due to the fact that they package amazing concepts in short words. Not to impress people, not to expand their vocabulary, but to truly minister to them. I think it's good to use words they already know. No one will complain if your sermon didn't expand the listener's vocabulary. Here's a good rule of thumb. Don't overestimate the people's vocabulary, and don't underestimate their intelligence. Your main goal is not to expand their vocabulary, is to help them see and apply the Word of God. But don't underestimate their intelligence. But I don't think anybody's going to be complaining because they understood every word you said. And in this regard, it could be very helpful to you and me to follow Gunning's 10 principles for clear writing. So if you take a little excursus from page 79 and go to page 106, you'll see 10 principles to keep in mind that will help you be a clear writer. And this also applies to being a clear speaker. For example, as I said, keep sentences short. That's rule number one. Tests show that reading tends to become hard when sentences average more than 20 words. So sentences in Time Magazine, Reader's Digest, they average 16 to 17 words. An average sentence of business writing exceed 25 words, which is really too long. So keep your sentences short. Prefer the simple to the complex. This applies to sentence structure and the choice of words. Write, try to find out. Don't write, we endeavor to ascertain. Why use those complex words? Avoid excessive use of capital letters as well. The simpler, the clearer in our modern day. Number three, Gunning rule number three, prefer the familiar word. If the reader doesn't understand the words you use, he's likely to miss your meaning. Now, this doesn't suggest that you should have a small vocabulary. You need all the words you can master. But there are plenty of familiar words you actually can use. Number four, avoid unnecessary words. Nothing weakens writing more than words that you don't need. So read your copy over closely. Make every word carry its weight. Never write, it goes without saying that, since this admits that what you're saying is actually unnecessary. Put action in your words too. Number five, active verbs put life in writing. Don't smother action with too many participles and gerunds. You know, those ing words functioning like a noun. Write, we aim to write clearly, rather than clarity and composition is our intention. Avoid the passive voice and the to be verb as much as possible. What I often do when I'm writing is I'll write things out and then I will go back through, and every time I use is or to be or are, some kind of form of the to be verb, I try to change it up and make sure that I'm writing with more action. Write the way you talk is number six. Well, anyway, a little that way. Conversational tone is one of the best avenues to readable writing, and I would add also understandable listening. Don't lapse into a stuffy business jargon that has no relation to the way people talk face to face. Number seven, use terms that your reader can picture. Be aware that abstract terms tend to make writing dull and foggy. Prefer the short, concrete words that stand for things you can see and touch. Number eight, tie in with your reader's experience. Link your new idea with some old idea that's already known to your reader. We would add, or listener. This keeps his attention and leads to greater understanding. Number nine, make full use of variety. Don't smother your individual writing style. Develop a fresh form of expression that represents you. Avoid cliches. Avoid stilted patterns of writing. Let your writing flow with creativity, I guess is the idea here. And then lastly, of the 10 principles, number 10, write to express, not impress. Don't show off with complexity. Make your ideas clear with simple, direct writing. The writer who actually makes the best impression is one who can express complex ideas simply. I would say one of the scholars who had the most profound impact in my life was Dr. Charles Ryrie. One day somebody asked this great scholar with two PhDs how he could take such difficult concepts and express them so clearly. And he said, well, I think probably what I've done more than anything else is I teach children. Most people want to teach the adult class, but at church I teach the children. Because if I can't express the ideas clearly to them, then I don't think I really know what I'm talking about. Dr. Ryu was not so concerned about impressing people with his language. He wanted to express, he wanted to be clear. So whatever option you use in your manuscript, whether you use the prose or the outline one, be clear. That's what we're really talking about in this particular session, so that you don't think that you have to be writing your manuscript like you're writing a research paper. So that's the first one, be clear. Second option is be direct and personal. Remember, as I have here on back on page 79, you're speaking to a specific group in a specific place at a specific time. So be direct. You're talking to this class, you say, you know, Dr. Rick says this, or so-and-so says this, or we heard in chapel today, or whatever. You're showing that you're personal and you're relating to that particular audience directly. Use a direct address. Don't say, the Christian should give of his money. It's better to be more direct. Say, you know, you should give your money. Or better, give your money. Say that the right tone. And don't say, give your money to me, you know. Use questions to advance the flow of thought as well. For example, say, so how does this apply? Well, let's look at verses 3 to 5. Tell us that we should, and then you go on. Questions often will advance the flow of thought in a way that you're expressing things, maybe the way people are actually thinking. Use contractions and split infinitives in speaking, even though you wouldn't in writing. And use slang directly, not thoughtlessly. Also, be vivid in your writing. Appeal to the senses of sight and sound. Use specific, concrete details. By specific, I mean explicit and exact, while concrete means it paints a picture with the mind. So use your words to help people be able to visualize things, to think in pictures. Prefer good nouns and verbs over adjectives and adverbs. Say, that guy was a giant. Don't say, oh, he was a really tall man. Say, he bellowed, rather than saying, you know, he talked loudly. And say that the water was scalding, instead of saying, it was very hot. Do you see how those words have more of a vivid sense to them? In our rules, Gunning's rules, we also saw right in the active, not the passive tense. Don't say, the man was being pursued by the dog. Rather say, that dog pursued the man. The principle is, somebody does something. All right? And employ fresh figures of speech. Similes and metaphors pack more in a phrase than do volumes. You can be a really interesting speaker when you think through in advance exactly what you're going to say. So how do you be an interesting speaker? Let me just sum up what Robinson says here on page 189. He says, pay attention to your own use of language. How do you do that? Well, listen to yourself speak. Painful as it is, I will often listen to sermons that I have recently preached. And I learn a few things by hearing me preach. One of the things I'm working on right now is I think I'm speaking too slowly, so I'm trying to get more words in and speak a bit faster, because I can never speak as fast as people are thinking, but I can speak too slowly where I give people too much time to be wandering in their thinking. Study how others use language as well. When you hear sermons, ask yourself, how could that have been said better, or why was that said so well? And then another thing I find very helpful is read aloud. That will help you be able to know how to emphasize the proper words. Reading aloud is a very, very good way to do it. Now, what do you do with the manuscript once you have that manuscript done? there are four options, actually. At least after this course, there are four options. But we're going to only, I'm only going to let you use one option. But some people actually bring the manuscript, the full manuscript, into the pulpit. So they have right before them every single word that they want to say. We're not allowing that in this class, because what I have found over the years is that people, students typically just read what they've got there. And when I've allowed people to use, students to use PowerPoint, the tendency has been for some of them to have their PowerPoint be so detailed, full of so many words, that they're actually just reading through their PowerPoint slides. It's basically like reading a manuscript. And so even though I use PowerPoint and think it's very, very helpful, for the purpose of this course, unless you want to just put a map up or something like that, or a picture up or something like that, you can do that. But in terms of just using a bunch of words there, I really don't want you to do that. You don't use to bring the manuscript, nor do you bring the PowerPoint words into the pulpit, at least in this class. Another option is that people like John Stott, for example, have written out their manuscript, but then they reduce it to a one-page outline. You're actually going to start with a one-page outline and then expand it into a manuscript. And so in some homiletics situations, people are allowed to use to bring their one-page manuscript into the pulpit, but I want you to know it well enough that you don't do that as well. A third thing to do with the manuscript I find actually quite stressful, and that is memorizing the manuscript and then speaking it word for word. Now, we've seen here that some of my manuscripts, at least for a 25-30 minute sermon, are 5-6 pages long. That is an enormous amount of pressure to put on someone to memorize 5 or 6 pages. That's like being an actor memorizing lines for a movie or a play. No, I'm not expecting that anyone would do that. I don't expect you to memorize your manuscript. I'm not going to be in the back of the room comparing, oh, you said your sentence that way. You should have said it this way. You know, I'm not even going to have your manuscript in front of me. I'm going to go through your sermon like everybody else, listening and trying to grasp what you're saying. So what we're going to do in this class is the last one, to preach extemporaneously. What that means is you leave your manuscript back at your seat and you preach it without notes, but you also preach it without attempting to remember the exact words of the manuscript. And we call this extemporaneous preaching. The root word there is temporal and extemporal. So you're thinking, it kind of comes right out of the moment, but you have a basic idea of what you're trying to say, right? I love this, where the house comes down. You know, whoa, he preached the roof off. nice to hear a good old-fashioned sermon, Reverend. Now, manuscripts are going to, they'll help you know what words to use, but for most people, especially beginning preachers, those manuscripts just really get in the way. And they can really inhibit your delivery if you bring them in the pulpit. And most of the time when people would say something like this, wow, this was really a great sermon, they're actually not talking about somebody reading their manuscript. Now, you might say, wow, preaching without notes, that just looks impossible. How could I actually preach without notes? That's not really possible. I've never done that before. Well, so let's address the question of why. Why we preach without notes. There's a few reasons we do that in this class. Number one, it forces you to know your material. If you know you're coming in front of the audience without any notes, well, you tend to work more diligently on what you're going to say. And as a result, you end up with actually a better sermon. It enables you to preach with confidence as well. You say, no, that's not true. I'll be more confident if I have that manuscript, if I have those actual words in front of me. I'm not so sure. One preacher's son said to another preacher's son, my father's very smart. he speaks without notes. And his friend responded, my father's even smarter. He speaks without thinking. Well, we want you to do the first. We want you to speak without notes. And anyone sneaking notes on the sermon in class will fail the sermon. I want you to gain the confidence that, yes, you actually can do this. I was not so sure I could do it until I was forced to actually do it. And then I did it, and I've been doing it for years now. A third reason to preach without notes is that it frees you up to work on delivery. You don't have to worry about pages falling down or shuffling the pages or what to do with the paper and all that, what to do with your arms, because you've got full use of both of your arms and your whole body. You can walk around. You're not confined to be right there behind the pulpit. You can use your whole body to actually communicate the message. It's a wonderful thing. And then basically it just helps you speak more naturally. You know, we all speak without notes all day long. It's called conversation. It's called just communicating with people. And you want to have a very understandable conversational tone when you're preaching. And so you'll do that better without notes. So I want you to write it out, but then not use those manuscripts when you're actually in the pulpit. Now, I also want you to practice your preaching. And there's a few reasons for that. Practice enables you to know your sermon well. Just like writing it out word for word is going to help you know it well. So, it also enables you to communicate your sermon well. I find that the more times I practice a message, the better I communicate that message when I get in front of the actual audience. If I've gone through it 6 times, 7 times, 8 times, which I did in my earlier years, now I can go through it just once or twice and I have the same effect. But I find that I can communicate the message much better by actually practicing in advance. My words come to me more quickly, and I don't have to be struggling for those words. And I don't want my wife saying something like this, okay, I take it back, it wasn't a bad sermon, you know. Maybe he really didn't practice his sermon very much beforehand, and so it wasn't up to his own expectations, maybe his wife's as well. And the third reason to practice preaching is it helps you cut out stuff to keep to your time. When you practice it and you can't get it into the time that's allotted to you, whether that's 15 minutes or 20 or 30 minutes or 45 minutes or whatever, you say to yourself, you know, I can't do it. I can't share that story. I can't bring out that thing in as detail as I like, and you end up cutting it out. And therefore, you're able to stay to your time. You don't want people sitting out there in the pew saying, is it just me or is this sermon getting longer? It's really not the length of sermons that is such a factor in many churches. It's what people feel about your sermon length. Sometimes a 10-minute sermon can be quite torturous, but people will enjoy a one-hour sermon. Then this is where manuscripting can really come in handy. Now, how do you actually get that manuscript down, though? If you're going to do a Sunday message, here's what I suggest. How to practice preaching for a Sunday message. You finish your manuscript, actually, by Wednesday. So you're doing your work ahead of time. 4 days before you actually preach, you have your manuscript finished. So that on Thursday, you can read it through twice. Aloud. You're just reading your manuscript. You're just looking at it word for word and trying to get more familiar with it. By Friday, you preach it twice again, but at this point, you're not looking at the manuscript except for when you are trying to remember what it says, and then you're able to look down a little bit, you glance down, and yet you're not actually reading it through. By the time you get to Saturday, then you preach it twice without any glances. In other words, you preach through the whole sermon, and then you go back to the manuscript afterwards, and you look at it and say, oh, yeah, that's right. Bottom of page 2, I forgot to share that story. I'll share that one. I'll do it again. And then you practice it again without any glances. And then on Sunday, normally churches have Sunday morning services, and I have found it helpful, if I'm preaching on a Sunday morning service, to get down to my office or wherever and preach through that sermon one time Sunday morning. Get up a bit earlier so it's fresh on my mind for that day. And then I want to get into the pulpit, I'm actually preaching it. You can find a similar sort of thing for a Tuesday message. We're doing Tuesday sermons in this class. That would mean you would be finishing your manuscript the Friday before. And then you follow the same pattern so that you actually are ready to preach it without any notes on Tuesday. It would shift for Thursday, it would shift for Friday, but basically the idea is getting your manuscript done 4 days before. In summarizing all of this, we see what John Stott says that I find very helpful. There seems to be only one way to combine precision of language with immediacy of delivery. And that is for us to write the sermon in our study, but decline to read it from the pulpit. The whole process of sermon preparation from beginning to end was admirably summed up by the American black preacher who said, "First I reads myself full, then I thinks myself clear, next I prays myself hot, and then I lets go." You see the progression there? Reading, thinking, prayer, and then really just trusting God to use you. That's what we want you to do. And again, the process is you want to have a sermon that is true, that is interesting, that is clear, and that is relevant. So make sure when you finish your manuscript, you go through and you look through, is this really true? Is it interesting? Am I keeping the listener engaged with applications and illustrations as we go through? Am I clear? Can I shorten my points? Can I clarify something here? And relevant, does the listener know exactly what he or she is supposed to do at the end of it? To do that, you will have finished step 7 of your sermon preparation process, where you actually are manuscripting it and then practicing it before you actually preach the message. And I pray that keeping these things in mind from this session on manuscripting will be really, really beneficial to you, and God will use you in increasing ways because you have these sort of things down. So that's my prayer for you.